versus Pennsylvania Higher Education.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's the same.
Yeah, it is the same one, isn't it?
Yeah, different.
Yeah, different controversy, but
different activity.
Appearance by that agency this week.
Yeah. The first one was debt collection.
The Darasaw case. What's the different point of keeping this stuff straight in your head? Mr. Dickerson.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Deeran Dickerson, Alston and Byrd, and I represent Pennsylvania Higher Education Assistance Agency, the appellant in this matter. The district court's decision below should be reversed for at least two reasons. First, the plaintiff lacks standing to pursue the TCPA claims in this case.
Oh, so we are going to talk about standing.
Well, I didn't want this to be a complete reprise, so I figured we would discuss another topic. And second, the district court below erred in its construction of the definition of ATDS. Because there's been ample discussion about ATDS by my fine colleagues, I'll begin with the standing question, also because it's a threshold issue. Plaintiff has not suffered an injury in fact. Of course, an injury, in fact, must be concrete, even in the context of an alleged statutory violation, as we have here. Plaintiff's single allegation of harm is that she was, quote, annoyed and feels harassed. This allegation falls far short of establishing standing, and nothing
according to the recent panel opinion of this court in Cordoba.
I think that panel decision is distinguished, and I think the Salcido decision is more applicable.
Salcido, though, is a text message.
Right, but I
Cordoba's called.
Sure, but I think if you look at the rationale in both cases, that it makes it clear why Cordoba distinguished itself from Salcido. Here, like in Salcido, the history and judgment of Congress dictate against standing. Evans' allegations are even less concrete and less specific than the allegations of harm in the Salcido case.
Just to be clear, Salcido involved one text message.
Correct. And Salcido also expressly indicated that its analysis was not quantitative, but it was qualitative. In other words, it didn't arrive to its decision because of the fact that there was only one text message. Rather, it came to its decision because the allegation of harm itself in receiving that text message was not concrete, was not an actual injury. Like in Salcido, Congress has said nothing about the harms alleged here. In other words, the receipt of debt collection calls. In enacting the TCPA in 1991, Congress was clearly concerned about random telemarketing calls. The legislative history is replete with Congress's concern about that particular type of harm, as well as the disruption and invasion into someone's home represented by a call to a residential line.
Something that most people are moving away from. My residential line is my cell phone.
This is correct. And in Salcido, in fact, the court and Cordoba as well recognize that cell phones are often taken outside of the house, which is not the type of harm that Congress...
They may be, but they're often in the house too.
Sure, absolutely. And so an allegation would have to be specific to associate itself with the type of harm that Congress addressed. In the hundreds of pages of legislative history, Congress didn't even mention debt collection calls. That was not the primary purpose of enacting the TCPA. And in fact, when President Bush, 41, signed the bill, he mentioned that it was over-inclusive, but it was essentially the best tool that they had at the moment. The bottom line is that the harm Congress intended to remedy through the TCPA was not the receipt of debt collection
calls. Well, the statute mentions debt collecting.
Yeah, you're exactly right. It mentions it only in exempting certain calls relating to debt collection calls.
But that's an acknowledgement that the statute governs debt collecting calls.
Oh, I'm not suggesting it doesn't govern debt collection calls. It certainly does. But when we're talking about standing, it's about the harm that Congress intended to remedy.
Telemarketing calls can be an intrusive invasion of privacy regardless of the type of device called, right? That's what Congress recognized. And I mean,
or the topic called about. The
emergency lines, hospital patient rooms, healthcare patient rooms, elderly home patient rooms, radio services, pagers, cell phone users, they're all protected from automatic dialing systems.
Correct. Correct. And so when you're talking about the application of the statute to those particular devices, it certainly applies to the devices. But in analyzing the specific harm, as this court
what
has...
What Salcido said was, well, you know, texts, though, didn't exist and weren't part of this.
Right. And in the same way, they tethered that analysis to the legislative history, that Congress did not contemplate text messages as the type of harm to remedy.
Doesn't that make Salcido distinguishable?
I'm sorry?
Doesn't that make Salcido distinguishable?
Well no, because in the same way, Congress did not identify debt collection calls as the harm intended to be remedied.
So maybe I'm not following your argument. It really makes a difference, the topic of the call, whether it's a harm? Robocall is trying to sell something versus robocall trying to collect money. And there's just one of each. One would be an Article III injury and the other wouldn't. And the one that isn't is because it's debt collection?
Sure. Well, so first, I wouldn't concede that any telemarketing call establishes an actual injury. But I think there is an important distinction.
But you keep emphasizing debt collection. I can't understand how the topic could make that big of a difference.
Sure, because I do think there is a distinction between debt collection calls and telemarketing calls.
For purposes of invasion of privacy?
Sure. Well, first of all, I'm not sure that that Salcido or even Cordoba took the position that a telemarketing call in itself is an invasion of privacy. I mean, when you look at the allegations and...
Congress certainly referred to it.
Sure. In the context of... When Congress referred to it as an invasion of privacy, it was directly in the context of calls to residential homes. That was the language that Congress used in identifying the invasion of privacy associated with a call by a telemarketer. But when you're talking about debt collection calls are calls that a consumer should expect when they don't pay their bills, as opposed to the randomness of telemarketing calls that are intended to sell a product that perhaps the consumer doesn't want. And I think, you know, we'll talk about, I'm happy to talk about ATS as well, but I think that the tethering of telemarketing calls to this idea of random or sequential number generation is important because consumers are receiving these telemarketing calls randomly, whereas debt collection calls are obviously specifically targeted to the consumer who has failed to pay their debt. And of course, Congress also...
That would blow up that whole statute, if you're right. I mean, you'd get a lot of credit if you won this argument because, hey, it's a letter. You should expect a letter. You didn't pay. What were you thinking? Same with the call. I don't know.
Well no, because there is a statute that directly addresses...
Yeah, that's my point. You're blowing up the whole statute with your idea that there's no Article III injury when you get what you should expect. And when you get what you should expect, that is the situation where you didn't pay someone what they're owed, and they now ask for it. How could that be a harm, is what you're saying. And I'm just thinking, yikes.
Well, it's not a harm in the receipt of it itself. But you could envision harm if, for example, a debt collector places 20 calls a day. That might rise to the level of the type of intrusion that Congress envisioned. But a single call, I mean, I think we have to keep in mind that in this particular case...
It's far more likely when you're using... one of these automatic systems.
Sure, but in the facts in this case, there were only a handful of calls per month, so clearly not rising to the level of harassment. I only have a few minutes left, and I'd love to address some of the...
A handful a month.
So, it was 4 or 5 per month, so about 1 a week, for a debt that the plaintiff, in fact, owes, which is undisputed. But on the ATDS issue, I think this is really a straightforward issue of statutory construction, and I know the court may be struggling with the grammatical analysis, but I think when you look at the phrase using a random or sequential number generator, that phrase has to modify the predicate clause that comes before it. And the one that comes immediately before it is produce numbers to be called. So it clearly has to modify that predicate clause, but it also has to modify to store, because if you remove numbers to be called, from the clause store, then store becomes a transitive verb with no object, and it demands an object. It must have an object. So the only way to interpret the statute in a way that is fair to grammar is that using a random or sequential number generator modifies both to store numbers to be called as well as to produce numbers to be called. And I'd also like to address the distinction between produce and generate. I think there was some confusion in the previous discussion about what does produce mean as opposed to what does store mean. And I think when interpreting a statute, you have to give every word meaning. And generation or generating numbers is different than producing numbers. So an ATDS is equipment that has capacity to either store or produce numbers that have been generated using a random or sequential number generator. And so the generation of the number is the creation of them, whereas the producing of the numbers is the population of the numbers to call in that specific instance. So you can easily envision how this works in real time.
The lawyer in the last case in rebuttal, I mean, it was a little much, the whole all numbers in the United States, but what about just a list of all numbers in a county? So you just get all numbers in a list in a county, whatever, it's a big county, we'll call it a million people. You store them, and then you dial them. So that wouldn't be using a random or sequential number generator, right?
That's absolutely correct.
So that would be exempt.
That would not be an ATDS under the statute. And the reality is, obviously, technology has changed, and we have to take Congress's words for what they are.
But that particular problem would have existed in 1991. Wouldn't that problem have existed in 91 of just getting all numbers in a county, all numbers in a city?
Sure, and Congress was very specific and did not address that scenario. Mm-hmm. Congress intentionally inserted the words using a random or sequential number generator. And so if numbers aren't generated randomly or sequentially, then the equipment is not an ATDS, or if the equipment doesn't have the capacity to do that.
The Act also prohibits calls to cell phones using an artificial or pre-recorded voice.
Correct.
It seemed to me that the district court made a finding that 13 calls were placed using an artificial or pre-recorded voice, and that clearly violated the Act. Now, there are 22 other calls that are a different issue, but it seemed to me that aspect, even if you're right about the merits in Narongo and standing, would have to be affirmed.
I would respectfully disagree. The evidence submitted to prove up that there were pre-recorded calls was not authenticated. There's no evidence in the record.
Rule 56E, amended in 2010, no longer requires authentication by an attached affidavit.
Sure, but plaintiffs still
can challenge the authenticity of the transcript or the recordings in the district court.
I think in FIA's motion to reconsideration, there was a challenge to the authenticity.
In what?
In the opposition to motion for summary judgment, as well as in motion for reconsideration, there was a challenge to the sufficiency of the evidence on that point.
Well, we'll look at it.
My time's up.
Thank you, Mr. Dickerson. You saved 3 minutes for rebuttal, Mr. Hill.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. My name
is... This is a housekeeping matter. Oh, go ahead.
My name is Adam Hill. I represent the appellee, Tabitha Evans.
As a housekeeping matter, am I right about that? That aspect of the record on the 13 calls, there's a separate violation there at least?
Yes, you are correct. So the district court found that there were 35 violations.
Did they challenge authenticity?
I do believe they did raise that, but that may have been on appeal. I don't recall that actually being raised
in the district court.
In the district court. In fact, when they discussed the lack of evidence, I think what is being ignored is that Ms. Evans at her deposition testified, yes, these are the messages that I received. She turned the 13 voicemails over to PHEAA in discovery. When she was asked at her deposition, are these the messages? She said, yes. Those messages were actually provided to the district court for the district court to listen to see, are these automated or not? In addition to that, Ms. Evans had a call log. Sorry, do you have a question?
No, I don't think so.
Okay. Ms. Evans produced a call log that showed when she received those messages, with the date and time that she received the messages, and that also was supported by PHEAA's call log, which said left answering machine message at the same date and time. So the district court was provided with evidence that PHEAA did make those calls, and they were also provided with the calls or the messages themselves, right. So they could listen to those messages.
They all sound alike.
And yeah, say, well, yes, because they're pre-recorded, artificial voice pre-recorded.
Right.
So yes, that's why they all sound alike.
So are you, your agency, is it a private entity?
My firm, my law firm, yes.
No,
it's the other side's the agency. Are they a state agency or a private entity?
They're a private entity. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, that has been addressed by other courts, and it was not addressed, though, in our case.
Well, that one does have jurisdictional consequences. It's clearly a private entity?
To the best of my knowledge, it was, because I believe, as I mentioned, I believe PHEAA has raised that issue with other courts, and I believe the courts have. In fact, there was another case that was stayed until that was decided, and has since moved forward.
Okay, it's a funny name, Pennsylvania Higher Education Assistance Agency.
Which we've heard a lot this week.
The second time around, but okay.
So I guess that's the issue with the pre-recorded voice. Like I said, the district court was provided with evidence that those calls those voice messages originated from PHEAA. They were provided with evidence that they were in fact pre-recorded. Getting to the standing issue, because my colleague addressed that first. They admit candidly they did file a motion to dismiss, arguing the standing early in the case, which was since denied. As this court requested some briefing on the issue in Salcido, as we had mentioned in our brief, subsequent to that, Cordoba was entered, which recognized that there is a difference between a single text message, which was the case in Salcido, a single text message versus phone calls. Text message and phone calls are two different things. I think the other thing that is very that offers a unique distinction is that in this case, these phone calls occurred after Ms. Evans specifically called up PHEAA and told them, I don't want these phone calls to my cell phone anymore. She specifically told them, I don't want these calls. Please stop calling me. And what PHEAA did was exactly what she asked them not to do. They continued to call her. And more so, as we've addressed in our briefing, they didn't pick up the phone and dial her phone. They used their Avaya dialer to have that machine just call her rather than actually do it themselves. And she testified that when she would get these voicemails that should not have been placed from calls that should not have been placed in the first place, she would go and see the voicemails. So she recognized that
voicemails were pre-recorded messages?
Yes. Those were the 13 that were provided to the district court that the district court entered an award of treble damages on. Because as the district court found when issuing treble damages, regardless of what PHEAA thought was an ATDS and what was not, it actually found that PHE's belief was somewhat dubious, but it said there was no question that pre-recorded or artificial voice messages was prohibited by the statute. And PHEAA knowingly and willfully placed what it knew was prohibited by the statute to Ms. Evans' cell phone, which is why it entered an award for treble damages on those 13 calls. So I would like to address the issue with an ATDS and what constitutes an ATDS. Now, I think we need to keep in mind that what it's called an automatic telephone dialing system. If you ask anyone on the street what is an automatic telephone dialing system, they're going to say it says right there in the name. It's a system that automatically dials telephone numbers. And there is no dispute that the Avaya dialer that PHEAA used to place these calls does precisely that. The evidence shows it uploads calling lists to its system. It then automatically places those calls. It can even adjust the pace to make sure that there are enough people that are there to take the call if a call is connected, because if a call is connected, the system then transfers that call to a live representative. When you look at what is an automatic telephone dialing system, I think you do need to give, my colleague said, you need to give every word its meaning that's written in the statute. The definition of an automatic telephone dialing system is equipment with the capacity to store or produce telephone numbers to be called using a random or sequential number generator and to dial those phone numbers. You need to give every word in that statute meaning and purpose. Store is in there. First, it says store or produce. It is using the disjunctive. You don't need to store and produce. You need to store or produce. If you say that a random or sequential number generator is...
District court made a finding as to whether the system used a random or sequential number generation at any point in the process?
I don't believe it is, but we didn't really contest that they use a random or sequential number generator. We acknowledge, as they admitted, they use a list. They use a list to place these calls. So, and that's what is encompassed by the statute and what is an ATDS, because it says to store or produce telephone numbers. If you say that those telephone numbers must have been produced by a random or sequential number generator, yes, store is completely read out of the statute, because it doesn't matter whether a number is produced by a random or sequential number generator and called immediately, or it's produced by a random or sequential number generator, stored, and then called later. It doesn't matter when it's called. All that matters is that it was produced by a random or sequential number generator. So if that is a requirement of the statute, it would not say store or produce. Store has absolutely no purpose in the statute. It would say store and produce if a random sequential number generator was in fact required to be an ATDS.
Counsel in the earlier case raised the possibility that you could produce and dial right away, and then you could have a situation where they're stored and using the same sequence and then called later. Why isn't that possible?
Because in that instance, it doesn't matter that it's stored. All that matters is that it was randomly or sequentially generated.
No. Store numbers to be called using a random or sequential number generator and dialing such numbers later.
A generator, by its very nature, is generating numbers or producing numbers, creating numbers, making numbers. All you're saying is that that's all that's required, is that something made a number and then later on dialed that number. But no, the statute says stored or produced. If it's a system, and that is what encompasses list-based dialing systems, which is what was at play in this issue, was a list-based dialing system.
And I don't see list-based dialing system in the definition.
Well, it says stored or produced. I mean, if you're storing something, you're storing it possibly in a list. Uh-huh. But that's what's encompassed. And as I think it was brought up by the Ninth Circuit, where list-based dialing systems is encompassed, is because there are certain defenses within the TCPA that would serve no purpose if it wasn't a list-based dialing system. For example, those who have provided their prior express consent. If those people are being called just by a number being generated out of random or thin air, the odds of them actually providing express consent are very low. Therefore, that defense would really have no purpose. Similarly, the exemption for calls that are used to collect a debt that are owed to the United States, same issue. If you're using a random or sequential number generator to call people to try and collect a debt owed to the United States, the odds of you actually finding someone using a random or sequential number generator, generating numbers out of thin air, who owes a debt to the United States, is very low. That would also serve no purpose.
You know, you can almost have trouble with the produce one, which is the one we don't talk about because it seems too natural, but produce and then that have to be random. Well, given all the numbers you're not allowed to call, no production is purely random, right? Because you could initially produce a bunch of random numbers, but given that they have to make sure they don't call this number, that number, and that number, it's no longer purely random anymore.
Well, I think initially at some point, any telephone number has to be somehow randomly or sequentially produced, whether it's by the phone company or not. But I think when Congress wrote this law, when they said stored or produced telephone numbers using a random sequential number generator, that definitely would go to the telemarketers who are calling random people, not hopefully you owe a debt, hopefully you provided express consent. I think when they use random or sequential number generator for the production of phone numbers, that was when they were dealing with telemarketers, which was a problem in 1991. But they also said stored or produced. They're not requiring both. They're requiring also numbers to be stored. And that's what addresses the list-based dialing, because the number would be stored in the list, and then the system automatically dials it, which is what an ATDS
suggests. Linguistically, your approach is to think of one thing is to store telephone numbers to be called, you know, ellipses and to dial such numbers. That's your preferred approach.
Yes, and I believe that's the approach that was taken by the Ninth Circuit.
I'm asking, is that your preferred approach?
Yes, that would be the approach that I adhere to, because it's the automatic dialing of telephone numbers. It's so, and that's what's important.
But it's just so strange that you have to have an object of to store. That's why you're doing that. But then suddenly the thing that's modifying to be called, you get rid of. That's what's so hard linguistically.
But that's where the production comes into. It's using a random or sequential number generator.
I know why you're doing it. I'm telling you, it's just a funny way to write a sentence.
And I think everyone here has acknowledged today it's maybe not the most carefully worded statute, but that's why we need to look to the statute as a whole, why there is some ambiguity in the statute itself, because it's not properly worded. So we need to look at what was the intent of Congress when they wrote this. The intent of Congress were people getting bombarded by phone calls, unwanted phone calls.
Yeah, and the minute we go down that road, I mean, we're on this plane where it's okay, fine. Their interpretation exempts the long list of everybody in the county, bad problem number one, and then bad problem on the other side is every cell phone is covered. You know, I don't know if that's actually the best ground in which to fight the battle.
Well, I don't believe every cell phone is covered, because that was the issue before the D.C. Circuit when they were addressing capacity. Because I know there was a big concern that if you take a smartphone, you could download an app that would all of a sudden start automatically dialing everybody in your contact list. And therefore, anytime a cell phone is used to place a phone call, that would technically be an ATDS, and they could subject someone to TCPA liability. That's why they said it's not the potential capacity, because smartphones would have the potential capacity if they downloaded an app. That's why they said we're looking at the current capacity of a cell phone, or not of a cell phone, the current capacity of your telephone technology. Is the system you are using to dial, does it have the current present capacity to automatically dial, to act as an auto dialer? If so, then yes, it is an auto dialer. But that would not include every cell phone, because not every cell phone inherently has this capacity to automatically dial every phone number stored in a contact list or automatically call anybody, for that matter.
Can it automatically dial everyone that calls you in response to this do not disturb?
I don't know how you... I mean, I don't know how... I'm thinking of my cell phone. I don't know how I have the ability to automatically call any missed call or anything like
that. That's because you and I both don't know how to use the feature.
That's possibly true. I don't know if those features exist to automatically call missed calls. Inherently, cell phones...
No, do not disturb. It responds by saying, do not bother me, I'm driving. You get back. It's automatic. It's from a list of people you know.
Well, I don't think that would be from a list in that instance. I mean, it's a direct response to something.
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be a list. It has to be a number that's stored that you dial back.
But I don't know. I don't think it would necessarily be a stored number. And if it was automatic, then there's a possibility that it could be. But that's not what Congress was looking at. That wasn't what Congress was trying to prevent. They're trying to prevent what exactly happened here. Someone calling a company saying, I don't want these phone calls anymore. And rather than abiding by those wishes to keep her on their automatic dialer, which admittedly just takes a list, automatically dials these phone numbers, and if it connects, it then transfers that call to a live representative. That's what Congress was looking to try and prevent. And unfortunately, that didn't work in this instance, because despite her request for these calls to stop, she was kept on the dialer. And I believe my time is up.
Yes, it is.
Right. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Dickerson.
Thank you. Just a couple of points.
What's your agency?
I'm sorry?
What is your agency?
It is an instrumentality of the Pennsylvania government. I can't give you specifics as to what that means, but it is a quasi-governmental organization.
Yeah. You do not contend, though, that it is a state agency that is entitled to 11th Amendment immunity?
That is an issue that has been litigated in the courts in the Fourth Circuit. We did not make that argument in this case.
Have they all been litigated against you?
The Fourth Circuit case was.
Uh-huh.
It was. One thing that I think is important about the district court's decision is that its analysis is completely flawed. And its original motion for summary judgment order, the court relied exclusively on the 2003 FCC order. After ACA International came down, we filed a motion for reconsideration and argued that ACA had vitiated or vacated the 2003, 2008, and the 2015 FCC orders. The district court agreed with that, but nonetheless, strangely, reaffirmed its original decision without explanation, with a single line, and said our original order was correct. Well, of course, it could not have been correct because the original decision was based solely on an order that everyone agrees has been vacated. And so at a very minimum, this court would need to remand the case to the district court to analyze the issue of the statutory text. The second thing
that may be for those 13 calls.
Well,
unless
those calls weren't sufficient evidence, correct. And I think it's important also to recognize that that Congress never intended for the statute, the ATDS definition, to reach this type of equipment. And I think even the FCC's 2003 order essentially recognizes that because they note that technological changes have required a modification to their interpretation of the ATDS definition. And in fact, they needed to adopt new rules. So even the FCC in 2003 understood that the original definition of ATDS didn't apply to predictive dialers, the type of equipment at issue here. And then the final thing I'll say is that the factors the Cordoba court used to distinguish the case from Salcido are absent from this case. For example, nuisance calls to homes from telemarketers. That was an express statement from the Cordoba court. The cost of using telephone minutes. There's no allegation of that in this case. And occupying the device so that it couldn't be used for other purposes. Again, no allegation of that in this case. So for those reasons, we ask the court to reverse the decision of the district court.
Thank you. We're going to proceed to our last case of the week.